staff and myself, I would sincerely like to wish all those students leaving for Christmas vacation a pleasant journey and the happiest of holidays.
Do you know where I wish I was spending Christmas?
In a funny hutch.
I'd rather spend Christmas in a cave than with my mother and her freaky artist friends.
A cave? That's going a bit far, don't you think?
Not if you knew her mother.
Anything you can get your hands on is your favorite.
Charlotte.
Any particular place, sweetheart?
Lock your door, too. I want you to be safe, Nancy. There's evil here. I can feel it. The devil's here.
Will you stop messing around and seduce me like a man? Oh, Tom, take that bloody mask off.
Dad, oh my God, we're gonna die! We're all gonna die!
Pull yourself together!
Hi, I'm Barbara Crampton from Chopping Mall, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome to a very festive episode of The Hysteria Continues. And we're going to be heading off for a sorority Christmas. Can I hear chuckling in the background? Was that Santa? I can't hear anything. Is anyone? Hello? Is anyone there? We've had a little bit of a fraught morning anyway. I won't go into... I've just had to rush into work and sort out a leaky stopcock. So I'm kind of so everything's been slightly delayed, but hopefully it's going to. Well, I'm sure it'll be a good show, especially because we have a very special guest with us, Amanda Reyes, and we're delighted to have you with us. And especially it's because you're kind of transatlantic at the moment, Amanda, aren't you? Which is why you're. What time is it in the morning for you? About three.
It is 5 a.m. here, but I'm just got back from Australia, and it is I don't know, like 1 p.m. there on Monday, Sunday here.
It's kind of, yeah, it's weird. I've done that trip a few times because my sister lives in Sydney. So it really messes with your head, doesn't it? The time you get over there and adjust to everything, and then you're kind of back, and then it's all. But you had a good time. You know, what were you doing over there? You were at the festival, weren't you?
Yeah, I was a guest at a festival called Monster Fest. They actually had a whole day of TV programming, and they asked me to come in and do a panel with three or four other people that are contributors to a book I edited that's coming out called Are You in the House Alone? A TV Movie Compendium. So we did like a PowerPoint slide, and we talked about like how awesome Farrah Fawcett is.
Okay.
She is awesome.
She is.
Well, that sounds great, but it looked like you had a great time.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. We spent like a week in Melbourne, and then we spent a few days in Sydney, and we got to meet a lot of really great people, including John Kleiser from Retro Slashers.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. I read somewhere you mentioned that it's coming back. Is it Retro Slashers?
Well, he brought the archive back, so all of our stuff is still available to look at, but I don't know that he wants to add to it anymore because he kept getting hit by viruses, and I think it got to the point where it just was too much of a pain to maintain.
Okay.
I probably shouldn't have said that. Who knows why he did it? I'm just telling stories. But I think he just wants to keep the archive going, which is nice because so much of my stuff that's online is gone now. Mm. And you always think online means forever, and it really doesn't.
No. Oh, is that Stripes?
She's trying to get me to pet her, so I'm trying to keep her calm.
Oh, she's wearing a little Christmas hat.
No, she wouldn't ever wear anything.
Well, we'll come back to you. Well, obviously, we'll hear lots from you in this episode, Amanda, and it's great to have you with us. And
Thank you and, so much. I'm so excited.
Yeah, well, no, it's been brilliant. It's been a long time coming, so as it were. So, no, thank you. But Nathan, how are you doing? How are you feeling festive yet?
No, I'm really scared because I'm scared of that thing on the VHS box for this movie.
Oh, what they think? Yeah.
I don't know what that thing is, but it traumatized me as a child, so it hasn't gone away. I'm still afraid of it as an adult.
It is. Is it meant to be Santa?
I don't know. It doesn't look like Santa to me. It looks like some weird alien creature.
It looks like them. Spoiler alert: the killer. I think. Just
really?
with glowing eyes. This is the same poster as on the cover of the Blu-ray, isn't it, Justin?
Yeah. No, it is. It's the one that was on the. I've got the kind of Dutch release, old VHS, a big box of it. Of course, we're talking about To All a Good Night, as you heard on the intro, is the festive slasher we will be covering. We'll be talking a lot more about that shortly. But Eric, how are you doing? Are you scared?
I'm very good. No, I'm in celebratory mood because it's a very special slasher-related birthday today. I think you've all missed it. The ultimate Scream Queen is 43 today, and that is, of course, Tyra Banks from Halloween Resurrection.
Oh, yeah.
Happy birthday, Tyra.
Classic slasher actress.
Yeah.
Is she only 43? I always thought she'd be older.
She's only 43, yeah.
Oh, happy birthday, Tyra. So I am stuffing my face. If you hear munching, I do apologise. But I didn't get a chance to have breakfast. So, all on the fly. But thank you, Eric. And Joseph, how are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. And now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho.
Mm. And is that another Simpsons reference?
No, that's from Die Hard. One of my favorite Christmas films.
I thought that Jingle All the Way would be your favorite Christmas movie.
Well, I do like that one.
Joseph, have you seen that meme going around? Because for some reason, it always makes me think of you, that one where it says, you know, it's not Christmas season to me until I see Hans Gruber fall off the plaza.
I always watch Die Hard 1 and 2 during the holidays because those are my favorite Christmas movies. Two of them, anyway. Two of my favorite Christmas movies.
I think Black Christmas is your favorite, though.
Well, yeah, of course.
Is it?
Yes.
You're one step closer to being Joey Tribbiani.
How dare you?
He loves Die Hard.
Die Hard! Yes.
I love Hard to Die.
Sure he does. Well, Justin liked it as well, so you have one person in
the
camp.
I did like it.
Yay.
Exactly. What about you, Amanda? What side would you fall on of Hard to Die?
You know what? I've never seen Hard to Die. Can you believe that?
Oh, my goodness.
You have to rectify that.
I know, I'm sorry.
And then you've got to. You can have the deciding votes about whether or not it's a yay or a nay.
You can break the tie.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'd love it. I know my husband loves it, and I think he can't believe I haven't seen it either.
Well, there you go. That's a invitation. So get back to us with that. But, great to have us all together around the festive fire, as it were. We had Christmas drinks. I'm feeling a little bit festive because we had people around for Christmas drinks last night. Which ended with lots of Prosecco being drunk and ended. But has anyone played the cork game before?
What is it?
It's where it's called Consequences. It's where you burn the end of a cork, and obviously there were quite a lot of those popping yesterday. You burn the end of a cork, and then so it goes black, and then you think of something like your favourite dictator, for instance, and then you go around the room, and the person who says that person, like Idi Amin or whoever it might be, then you say, then they're the ones who get corked, which means you go up and you draw on their face with a cork. And so you can draw it.
I don't have a favorite dictator. What?
It doesn't have to be a dictator.
I'm pretty sure it's Fidel Castro.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a dictator. It could be your favorite type of cheese or your favorite flour.
Kajagoogoo B-side.
Well, I don't have one of those, but yes, it could be if you're that way inclined. But that's quite a good party game when you've had a few drinks.
Your favorite Toya song.
Yeah.
So
you're hungover as well today?
Little bit, but not too bad actually, because I stuck to Prosecco, which I think is always good. When you start mixing drinks, that's when it can get a bit messy.
Yeah.
But it's good fun. Anyway, so I'm in the festive mood because we were listening to Motown Christmas and Phil Spector's Christmas album yesterday. So it was all getting in the festive mood for today. And so we will be coming on to David Hess's To All a Good Night a little bit later. As it were, yeah.
Gross.
She's one of us.
One of us.
You said coming on to David Hess.
Oh, I know. But, okay, well, before we do that, and while I eat my toast and try not to munch too loudly, as we've got limited time, we've got a lot to get through, including a festive quiz or a holiday quiz, in inverted commas.
No, it's not holidays, it's dates.
What, like prunes? like
date.
Dried fruits?
Any date. Any slasher movie. Any movie ever in the history of anything could be the answer.
Oh, Inga is here already.
Yeah.
We haven't even started the quiz.
I'm just preempting because I know that some of the answers are going to be totally unrelated to either holidays or dates.
Well,
so.
it's very sparse for you, Eric, so...
Well, we're going to be coming on to that later. But before we do, we'll have a quick rattle through... one film we've seen recently that we just want to discuss shortly. So, Amanda, as you're our guest of honour, what have you seen that's tickled your fancy?
I'm actually going to say two real quickly. So, and also, I made a huge list. It wasn't that long, but I was also the short film jury member at Monster Fest, so I watched 50 shorts, and I was going to go through every single one of them. No, I'm kidding. I had a list of three of them. But I was really busy, but I got to see two films that I thought were really good, new horror movies. One's called The Autopsy of Jane Doe. with Brian Cox. I don't know if anybody's heard of this, but it's about...
Looks really good. Looks really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really creepy. It's about these two guys who are like their father's son, and they run the like local, like, you know, mortuary, and they do all the autopsies. And this woman that was found in a basement at this murder scene shows up, and it's basically just about her autopsy and what happens during the autopsy. It's almost like in real time, and it's really, really creepy. I loved it. And the other film I saw was something called Safe Neighborhood, which is a new Australian movie, but everybody has American accents in it, and it's kind of like a home invasion movie, but I don't want to give too much away because it's a very surprising film. And what starts off as kind of a lighthearted, then sort of suspenseful home invasion film becomes completely something different and really, really dark. And it's pretty amazing. And I think everybody should check it out.
And what did you say the name of it was?
It's called Safe Neighborhood. It's got Virginia Madsen and Patrick Warburton in it, but they're only like bookended at the beginning and end. The middle part is a very young cast, and they're excellent. And I wasn't sure what it was about. We just saw it because Patrick Warburton was in it, and we were like, "This is going to be so good," and it was. It turned out to be really, really amazing.
Okay, I had to like put those in my computer so I can know to look them up later.
Good times.
Well, we'll know if we hear him typing later. We know who's cheating. So,
yeah.
No, I'll just mute my phone so you won't hear
it. Is that what you do? Okay.
Well, luckily I'm recording right outside Nathan's window this morning, so I can watch
you,
him.
You stalker.
Well, Amanda, Joseph takes a lot of his questions from Hysteria Lives website, so that's a good source for information if you need to cheat.
Not today.
Are you sure?
Maybe a couple, but I got creative with a few of these rounds. So,
okay. Well, thank you, Amanda. I'd like to check out both of those because, especially the autopsy of Jane Doe, that it looks right up my street. So, thank you for that, Eric. How about you?
Okay. Well, this is one I saw a couple of months ago. Now I went to the cinema to see a retro screening of Creature from the Black Lagoon in 3D. Now I'm not a fan of the movie. I don't really like 50s creatures features. I just find them a bit. Bland, I suppose, is the word. But I thought the 3D would wow me because this was from the 50s and I thought it was going to be really gimmicky and that. And it was for the first 5 minutes, but then nothing really jumps out of the screen and the film itself just doesn't float my boat. So I was kind of bored in the end. But like the 3D, when it did happen, was impressive and certainly, you know, better than going to see that ridiculous James Cameron movie that I can't think the name of now off the top of my head. Avatar, that's it. But yeah, I presume if you like, it started off really good, the 3D, and they had the creature's claw sticking out of the screen, and you could almost reach out and touch it. But then, yeah, it just doesn't keep that gimmick going. Unfortunately, I thought it would. So, you know, I went to see a film I didn't like on the basis that I thought the 3D would thrill me, but it didn't. Unfortunately, now I know Nathan disagrees with me about Creature from the Black Lagoon. You're a fan, aren't you, Nathan?
I mean, I like it. It's probably not one I revisit very often, but I mean, I do enjoy it.
Yeah, there were just endless moments where the creature gets on the boat, throws somebody overboard and jumps back into the sea or into the lagoon. And that just happened sort of on a loop for sort of 80 minutes. And I was bored. And I know slasher movies are kind of repetitive as well themselves, so I feel kind of guilty like critiquing Creature from the Black Lagoon that way, but I'm just bored by it. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh, that's okay, Eric. I haven't seen it for ages. I did a film that's really good in 3D is House of Wax, the Vincent Price one, because that has proper kind of like yo-yos coming out the screen at you, and I've got that because, you know, the 3D setup at home. So that's
Is that on 3D Blu-ray?
Oh
my gosh, I have to buy it.
Yeah, and that's really good. It's done really well, so it's quite a lot of gimmicky stuff, and it's probably the most gimmicky thing with the yo-yo, although it's kind of, it's one of the things, sometimes it's a little bit difficult, you know, it's like Jaws 3D. I don't know, I still haven't found the sweet spot when it comes to kind of 3D at home, because either when you have things coming out of the screen, like at the cinema, I remember actually people reaching up to touch it, the 3D that is, but at home it's kind of, when you have the things really coming out, it kind of makes you go a bit boss-eyed.
Yeah,
but yeah, and the House of Wax is good. The Creature in the Black Lagoon is not bad. The 3D, but it's not, yeah, it's not as gimmicky as you might hope. But thank you, Eric. How about you, Joseph?
I watched a film called The Monster. It's basically about this woman and her daughter. She's taking her daughter to live with her father because she's a kind of a chain-smoking drunk who really can't take care of her daughter. And they break down on a back road somewhere and basically are kind of terrorized by a monster in the woods. And I found it very, very effective. You know, it starts out a little slow. But, you know, once they get to the setting, as it were, in the woods with the monster, it gets really suspenseful, kind of nail-biting in a lot of places. And I think the acting is really well done. The practical effects are, you know, quite extraordinary. I was so, you know, happy that they didn't rely on CGI for the creature effects. It's all practical. So, you know, it gets a big, you know, kudos for that. But, you know, like I said, very suspenseful, kind of white knuckle thrills, grab your, you know, armrest in suspense type thing. One of the better movies I've seen this year. I may be in the minority on that because it's getting a lot of bad reviews for some reason, but I don't know. I loved it. Anyone else seen it?
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot, actually. I thought it was, you know, it was really well done for most of the movie, you know, being just them in the car.
Yeah.
You know, a good portion of the movie, you know, that's what happens. But they do a good job at building the suspense in it. And the creature is awesome.
Yeah, the creature is amazing. The creature effects are great. And I'm not going to get into, you know, too many spoilers, but just the bit with the mechanic underneath the car while they're waiting.
Yeah.
That was just like, terrifying. But yeah, it's a really good film. I highly recommend it.
Cool. That's another one that would like to track down. Is it where is it on Netflix or is it?
I caught it on demand.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you, Joseph. Who haven't we come to? Nathan. How about you?
I watched a short film recently that I would really. I hope you guys can. Watch soon because I'd love to know your opinions on it, but it's called The Bridge Partner. Mm. It's about this woman who's, you know, she's kind of meek and shy. And she's, you know, at this, you know, bridge club, you know, where all the women do the card game. And she doesn't have a partner. And so she's like given this other woman who doesn't have a partner. And this woman is sort of like the, you know, the outgoing, you know, she wears like designer clothes. She wears these like really big high heels and stuff. I mean, she's just kind of the polar opposite of this, you know, meek woman who's joined the bridge club. And everything seems to go okay during the game, but afterwards when she's, you know, like they're just talking, the outgoing woman is shaking her hand and she just kind of leans in and just whispers in that woman's ear, "I'm going to kill you." Mm-hmm. And then just keeps talking like to everybody like nothing just happened. So the movie is kind of one of those where it toys with you in that, is this in her head? Like, is the woman crazy, or did that woman really say that to her? And the rest of the short film, like they have these little run-ins, and it kind of gets you thinking, you know, like which way is this movie headed at the end? And then when the finale comes, you know, I'm not going to spoil it, but when the finale comes, you know, it's just one of those endings that I think it kind of leaves things up to interpretation, but it does it in a really good way. I love the final shot of that film. I thought it was awesome and very, very interesting. I haven't really seen a film quite like it. So I highly, highly recommend it.
Excellent. Okay. No, I've not seen that, but lots of good.
And where can we see this, Nathan?
It's on Vimeo. I think the creators of it put it on Vimeo online. It's only about 14 minutes long. Cool. It's actually got some recognizable faces in it, too. Beth Grant is in it, and I know her from a lot of stuff. She played the teacher in Child's Play 2.
Mm. Okay. Interesting.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you. A short film that I saw around Halloween time was, I don't know if I mentioned it, was that The Vicious? Which is the one with the woman coming home to a house. It's a British short film where her sisters she'd been caring for her sister and her sister had died, and there's something in the house with her. And it's a bit like Lights Out. It's got that kind of vibe to it, but it's quite frightening, quite scary.
Okay, wait. It's called Vicious?
Vicious.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen that. I posted about it on Facebook. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, it's quite terrifying, actually. It's really kind of well done for... but it's got a kind of lights-out kind of ending sort of type to it. But that's definitely worth a watch. There's lots of great little kind of short films out there at the moment.
Did anyone watch The Night of the Slasher?
Yes. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's your good one too.
Yeah, I've not seen that, but it's good. These are all good recommendations, so treat yourself to some short films. But the only film I was going to mention that I saw a few nights ago was The Boy, which is the one that's got about the woman. Is it Lauren Cohen from Walking Dead, who goes to be the nanny for a little boy at an English country estate. When she gets there, the elderly couple, the boy is actually a mannequin, and it turns out that the boy had died some years before, and they couldn't cope with it, so they got a mannequin instead, and they treated him as if he was alive. So they go away on holiday, and she's left in the house alone with this kind of mannequin of this boy, and weird things happen. Has anyone else seen it?
I saw it, yeah, in the cinema.
I mean, it's all right, isn't it? It's not great.
Yeah. I wasn't mad on the twist.
No, but the twist reminded me, without giving too much away, of Hell Knight. It kind of...
And it reminded me of a more recent film as well, which I won't give away because it will spoil it.
Okay. I think it's fair to say that it kind of enters kind of slasher movie territory towards the last half an hour or so. But it does keep you guessing about whether or not the mannequin is alive or something else is going on. But it's fairly easy to guess what it is once you start looking into it. Got some great shot scenes.
Is that Maggie from The Walking Dead?
Yeah, that's right. The only thing that put me off was it's set in England, but the house is so patently not an English country house. It was shot in Canada. And it looks 100% like Canada. It's got those kind of stone-clad kind of house, a bit like the one in The Haunting, the 1963 Robert Wise Haunting. But it looks nothing like an English country house, if you know what the one looks like. So they go to all this trouble to set it in England, but it's patently not England. But maybe an audience that isn't familiar with English country houses would notice that, but it did stick out like a sore thumb. But yeah, so that's what I've been watching. So hopefully, if you're listening, there's quite a few things there for you to check out if you haven't already seen them. Because I know people do say they like hearing some of our recently seen, because it does point them in the direction of good and sometimes bad films. So moving on at a pace, I think it's probably time to get those earmuffs on, because Inga could be on the way. I think it's the Christmas quiz, Joseph. So I didn't have time to do a jingle for this, so I might drop one in later or play something. Who knows if there's something going underneath this, but do you want to do your worst, Joseph?
Okay, there's four rounds, four questions per round. I'm going to be picking people alphabetically, so Amanda will go first.
Oh, jeez.
Round one is, how many people die in these Christmas films? So, Amanda, door number 1, 2, 3, or 4?
4.
Okay. How many people die in Don't Open Till Christmas?
Like the one I've seen only once. I'll just take a random guess. 6.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect. I'm going to pass this to Eric.
14.
That is correct.
Is it?
Oh, wow.
Yes.
We couldn't even hear you typing.
I didn't even get a chance to cheat.
Are you sure about that?
I am totally sure.
About going to hysteria. There's, I know. It continues.
There's 14 murders in that? Is there like one every 5 minutes?
Yeah.
He kills a lot of Santa Clauses.
I guess so. Does he kill Caroline Monroe in that? Is that too spoilery?
I don't think does he?
No.
Or does she just sing?
She just sings, I think.
She just gets her singing moment.
Oh, she's so awesome.
I love Carolyn Monroe.
Yeah, we watched Slaughter High yesterday. It was pretty amazing.
Okay, Eric, door number 1, 2, or 3?
I will go for door number 1.
Door number 1. How many people die in 1974's Black Christmas?
It's kind of a low body count, methinks. So I'm going to say 5.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect. Justin.
Well, as Eric said, it's quite a low body count, so I would say 6.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect. Nathan?
I don't know.
I can 7. Hear Nathan typing.
I'm just picking the next number.
What was your 7. Number, Nathan? That is correct.
5, 6, 7. Now, did you count the little girl that was murdered in the park?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So, Justin, door number 2 or door number 3?
Number 2, please.
How many people die in Christmas Evil?
Another low body count. I would say 4.
That is correct.
Is it? Wow.
Wow.
Yes. Wow. Not many people die in that movie. Wow, that might be why I found it to be kind of boring.
Justin has a really quiet keyboard.
Well, I said that within about 2 seconds of Joseph asking me the questions. Unless Joseph fed me the answers, which isn't true, then...
How do we know you don't possess the power to pause time, look up the answer, and then restart time?
Are you a Trump supporter, by any chance?
Yeah, I love him. And I love orange men. They're really sexy.
Well, it just that's a conspiracy too far. It's even... I don't think even a Trump supporter would fall for that one. So no, I'm just kind of... I'm just an expert on Christmas Evil, obviously, Eric, but...
Well, I got a question right as well.
Okay, Nathan, you're left with door number 3, so...
Okay.
How many people die in the dorm that drip blood?
Okay, wait a minute, because I remember that movie fairly well, so I'm going to count these deaths here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7.
Your type.
What was your answer?
I said 7.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect.
I missed somebody.
Amanda.
I guess I only remember 3, and I know Nathan knows what 3 I remember. I'm going to say 9.
Oh, I'm sorry, that is incorrect. Eric.
What was Nathan's answer? 7.
Wasn't it? Oh, how dare you 8. Process right me.
I'm going to say 8 then.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect. Justin.
6.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect, and no one has guessed it, so the answer is 10.
Wow, I don't remember there being that many deaths.
Nathan, you were way off. You,
I know.
Because Nathan was saying I'm so he was counting them up, I thought he was really close.
Oh.
Yeah, I did too. He kind of misread.
Yeah.
Does that include the dog?
Does that include the dog?
He said how many people.
Oh, okay. All right.
No. Okay, so going into round 2... Amanda has 0, Eric has 1, Justin has 1, and Nathan has 1.
You can just write 0 down on mine and leave it. I'm pretty sure that's where I'm going to stay.
Okay. Round 2, we'll start with Eric. And this round is fill in the tagline and name the movie. Basically, I'm going to give you the first and last word of the tagline, and you have to fill in the middle portion of the tagline and name what movie it came from.
Good Lord.
So, Eric, door number 1, 2, 3, or 4?
4.
Okay. The first word is you've, and the last word is Christmas.
You've. I have no bloody idea. You've just done a big poo on Christmas, and it's from the film Poo Christmas.
My favorite.
Surprisingly you enough, are. That is correct. Okay, Justin, do you know it?
Oh, you've I was trying to think what it's not Black Christmas. I don't know. I'm gonna pass it. I'll say the film's Christmas Evil, but I don't know what the tagline is.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect. Nathan.
You've been bad at Christmas from Silent Night, Deadly Night.
No, that is incorrect. Amanda.
You've been killed on Christmas. Christmas Kill, 1978.
No, I'm sorry. The answer is... You've made it through Halloween. Now try and survive Christmas, Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Okay.
Well, I got the movie right.
Well, Nathan got the movie right, so I'm going to give him a half a point.
That's not fair.
If it had been you, you would have said half. You would have got half.
I would have guessed a proper movie if I'd known that you could have got half a point for a proper movie.
Wait, title. Are you telling me Pooh Christmas doesn't exist?
I'm just kidding, Eric. I'm not giving him half a point. I just wanted to hear you go crazy. All right, so Eric picked door number four. We're going with Justin now. Door number one, two, or three?
As number two was kind to me last time, number two, please.
Okay. The first word is celebration, and the last word is macabre.
Celebration. It sounds like we celebration of the macabre, but what that would be, I don't know. A celebration of the macabre, it rings a bell. Silent Night, Bloody Night?
I'm sorry, that is incorrect. Nathan?
A celebration of the macabre, and I'm going to say Christmas Evil.
No, that is incorrect. Amanda?
Celebrate the holidays with the macabre. Do I have to name a movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I don't know.
Not Pooh Christmas.
That is incorrect, Eric.
Celebration time for everyone who loves the macabre. And that's the tagline for the movie, Dirty Dancing Christmas.
Well, you all got so close. It's a celebration of the macabre New Year's Evil. You both, one of you got the tagline, one of you got
the movie. And one got the movie.
Wow. Oh, I just made that up.
So no one gets a point yet. Okay, we started with Eric and we went to Justin. So Nathan, door number one or door number three?
One.
Okay, the first word is the. And the last word is home.
The home. I don't know. The massacre of many people at home. And
you're not even trying.
I am trying, but the and home, I cannot think. And if it was Christmas specific, then I might could narrow it down more, but this is holiday specific, so I really don't know. So I'm gonna guess the kids go to Muffy's home in April Fool's Day.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect. Amanda.
I was gonna guess April Fool's Day, but I was gonna say something like the horrors begin at home. That's it.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. Eric.
The girl with the long blonde hair runs into the woods and finds Jason's home, and that's from Friday the 13th Part 2.
Oh, good grief.
Great.
Justin.
Is it, well, is the,
hey,
is
you didn't the, tell me if I was right.
You know you're not right.
Is the movie Home Sweet Home?
No,
you can't do that. You have to guess the tagline then the movie.
Well, I thought the tagline was there's no place like home, but I think it's Home Sweet Home, but I might be wrong.
That is incorrect. The answer is The Night He Came Home, Halloween.
Oh, wow.
Joy.
I wouldn't even think about that.
Okay, so who was that?
Yeah, well,
that?
I think you'll find that on the Czechoslovakian poster for Friday the 13th Part 2. If you translate the tagline, I was correct.
Okay, Amanda, you're left with door number three. So the first word is why, and the last word is Melissa.
Oh, my God, I know this one. I know the movie. I don't remember the tagline, but it's like, why Melissa, why Melissa? And it's Sweet 16?
That is incorrect. Eric.
Why are all the boys dying to meet Melissa?
That is correct.
That's right.
That is correct, Eric.
Yay!
What holiday does Sweet 16 take place?
It's a birthday. It's a birthday celebration. All right.
God, loose. I told you it would be loosely connected.
You're in the lead and you're complaining.
Yay! No, okay, I'm not complaining.
It's hardwired, I think, into Eric.
Yeah. Okay, round three. Now, this one's going to be a lot of fun. This is the synonym game. Basically, I have a movie title, but I'm replacing each word in the title with a bunch of synonyms, and I'm going to read them out, and you can try to guess what movie it is. So, Justin, we'll start with you.
Mm-hmm.
Door number 1, 2, 3, or 4?
Number 2 again, I think.
Okay, here are the synonyms. The first one is the. Well, that's actually one of the words, so I didn't count that. The first one actually is after sunset, for in place of a word, preceding in place of the next word, and a Christian celebration in place of the last word.
So easy.
Oh, I know that one. No, I don't.
So after sunset, the night of, say it again.
The after sunset, preceding, and a Christian celebration.
The night before.
Oh.
The night before.
I know what it is.
No. A Christian a night before Easter.
That is correct.
Oh, I knew that one.
Could have been night before Halloween.
That's the day after Halloween.
Oh, is it? All right, yeah. Actually, yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Oops.
All right, so Nathan, door number 1, 3, or 4?
3.
Okay. The first one is ecstatic. The second one is natal period of time. The third is directed toward. And the last one is myself.
Happy birthday to me.
That is correct. Wow, you're actually getting pretty good at this one. I thought you'd have trouble with it.
We finally have a round we're decent at.
Okay, Amanda, door number 1 or 4?
1.
Okay, the first one is Gregorian calendar month.
Oh, Jesus. God, what?
Yeah, I can see
where this Gregorian calendar month. The second is idiots. That's plural. And the third one is period of time.
I feel like such a moron. Idiots is the right word. Gregorian calendar month, idiots, and what's the period of time?
Yes.
April Fool's Day.
That is correct.
Oh, scary.
Okay, so that leaves door number 4 for Eric, and I will be shocked if he doesn't get this one. Okay, the first one is dance.
Yeah.
And the next one is evening.
Prom night?
That is correct.
Yay!
Prom night! Wow.
Everyone got a point. I can't believe it.
More of those, please.
Yeah, we'll take more of those questions.
Okay, going into round 4, we'll start with Nathan, and this is the final round.
What are the scores? This round,
the score so far is Eric 3, Justin 2, Nathan 2, and Amanda 1. So, Eric, you are in the lead.
Well, is it ever going to be any other way?
Now, round 4 is the last round. Basically, I have assigned each of you a holiday or date film, and you can gain 3 points. So basically, Amanda or Nathan, we're starting with Nathan. Nathan will have to guess what I've assigned to Justin. Justin will have to guess what I've assigned to Nathan. Amanda for Eric and Eric for Amanda. So we'll start with Nathan. So Nathan, what movie have I assigned for Justin? You get one guess. It's a holiday movie, so make it count.
And there's no clue at all?
No clue.
It could be anything.
You just take a guess.
This is weird.
We're not psychic. Okay.
Justin, let's see. What do I think he would assign to you?
I'll tell you what. I'll give you a tiny hint each.
Is it related to the person?
No. I'll give you a tiny hint each.
Okay.
Nathan, this movie that I've assigned to Justin, you may be the only one who likes it.
Oh, well, that doesn't really narrow much down. Let's see. So I may be the only one that likes it. Now, I know Crazy Fat Ethel 2 doesn't take place on a holiday. So I can't pick it. What is something that I really like that y'all hate?
There's so many to choose from.
I know. There's like a ton that it could be. I'm going to say Home Sweet Home.
No, I'm sorry. The answer is, and no, we don't pass these over. So the answer is Trick or Treat.
Ah.
Oh, Okay.
So, Amanda,
mm-hmm.
you have yes. to guess what I've assigned to Eric. So, your hint is it features a VJ.
Oh.
I'm just going to say, I'm just going to say New Year's Evil.
I'm sorry. The answer actually is Bloody Birthday.
Oh, never mind.
There's a VJ in Bloody Birthday.
Yeah, the redheaded girl. What's her name?
Julie Brown.
Yeah. Downtown Julie Brown.
All right.
Okay, so Eric, you have to guess what I've assigned to Amanda, and your hint is a sweater.
Well, immediately I think of Mrs. Voorhees, but it wouldn't be that mainstream knowing you, but I'm going to say Friday the 13th.
That is correct.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
Okay, so Justin, you have to guess what I've assigned to Nathan.
Hmm.
Oh, and I forgot, Eric gets 3 points for that one. So
Why, hey.
Gets 3 points?
Okay.
Why would Eric get three points for that?
Because the last round, since it's only one guess and we don't pass it, you get 3 points. So,
okay, this is all very Justin, random. Yes,
Justin.
Mm-hmm.
What movie have I assigned to Nathan? And your hint is, let's see, what's a good hint?
Just give me the answer. That'd be a good hint.
Your hint is Maze.
Maze. So yes. there's a maze in the. Well, there's The Shining, the maze in The Shining, but I don't think that's not really... Well, it's kind of over Christmas, isn't it? So, shall I say The Shining?
No, I'm sorry. The answer...
Not a slasher movie.
Well, it, arguably, it is.
The answer is Valentine.
Is there a maze in that?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of an odd movie to assign to me.
Is it the... Well, you talk about the maze, the one with the art kind of trail thing in it?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Okay.
So let me get this straight, because I'm going to have a tiny little Inga moment here. So we all get these clues that can mean anything, but you give Eric sweater, which is very obvious. Come on, did the rest of you think of Mrs. Voorhees as soon as he said sweater?
I did. That's the way the cookie crumbles, rhubarb lady.
You would be thinking something different if you were in my position.
Fuck you, come on, I'm sorry.
I can't Inga out as good as Eric can, though. I'm kind of the minor version.
It isn't Christmas right. without Inga.
Quiz over.
Well, I won this week, so.
Eric won with 6. Justin and Nathan had 2. Amanda had 1.
I think that Eric won last year's too.
I think I possibly did, because I'm the king of everything.
I feel like I gave the quiz last year and Eric won that one. Yeah. I don't remember, though. Maybe I'm wrong, but I do know that there was one year I gave the Christmas quiz and he won.
Yep. This winning is becoming a habit with me.
Well, there's a conspiracy that does hold some water, I think, if Eric somehow... What? He probably got some Russian hackers have hacked into our accounts and...
Oh, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
You all played very well.
Thank you, Mr. Grace.
Some of us played well, more well than others, i.e.
me. No one likes a sore winner, Eric.
Yeah, well, nobody likes losers either, Justin.
Ooh.
Eric, I'm very magnanimous in defeat. So,
yeah.
Even when he wins, he gets kind of English.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna do a great one about, you know, like children in slasher movies. And, you know, when I get to Justin, I'm going to give him something easy, like, oh, her son was Jason. And then when I get to Eric and Joseph, I'm going to give something like, oh, these kids had green eyes. That's your hint.
I think that sounds good.
Somebody get him some rhubarb.
No, I want rhubarb pie.
Because my lawnmower is still my big fat fucking pig.
I think we'll be retiring, Rhubarb.
She uses more cuss words in her little rant than I think I have in the last, like, 3 months.
Mm.
You've got a potty mouth then, sometimes, Nathan?
Well, not often, but, like, usually if there's a curse word in a song, I'll probably sing the curse word.
Okay.
Or if somebody's, like, causes my road rage, I can be kind of bad about road rage.
Okay, yes. Right. Well, thank you, Joseph, for that quiz.
I'm very shocked at how well you guys did on the synonym game, though. I was kind of hoping that one would be the trip up, but nope.
But that was probably the most obscure last round, which kind of just like,
yeah, that was a very surreal last round. It reminded me of Bamboozle and Friends.
Yeah, so that kind
of. I think that was like the better round. I'm surprised you thought that one would trip us up. I mean, I'd be more likely to get tripped up by that tagline round where it's like it starts with the and ends with A.
Yeah. A and death.
Yeah.
Guess it.
We've been doing these quizzes for 6 years. You should know better by now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for that quiz. Well, that's got us into, well, the I wouldn't say festive or holiday, in maybe day mood, a day of the year.
I'm in a day mood now.
But let's move towards festive times and ho-ho homicide as we get to our feature presentation. And here is the trailer for To All a Good Night.
It was the start of Christmas vacation. A few were staying, and they planned to have one hell of a good time.
I would sincerely like to wish all those students leaving for Christmas vacation a pleasant journey and the happiest of holidays.
TJ is coming up with a few of his friends tonight.
The dean of the school was away, so the girls decided to invite their boyfriends. It was against school regulations, but they were always very good at breaking the rules. This time, they'll wish they hadn't.
You must pray. Pray so the devil won't claim you for one of his own.
Santa came to kill.
What the hell are you doing up here in that dumb outfit?
Even the police didn't suspect Santa Claus.
Oh, Tom, take that bloody mask off. Take me to bed.
No one suspected Santa Claus. He was hunting for blood. He was everywhere. What kind of a crazed mind was killing and mutilating his victim? There was no one to help. No one at all. They ran, they cried, they died. Merry Christmas to all.
"'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, Santa Claus is stirring, and he's not bringing gifts." That's a great rhyme. "Five young female boarders..." I'm reading this from the back of the Blu-ray. I'm not making this poem up myself. "Five young female boarders at the Calvin Finishing School have set their sights on a festive Christmas holiday romp. They have just drugged their house mother and smuggled their boyfriends into the house. But their fun-filled, promiscuous frolic will soon turn into a blood-soaked nightmare when a sadistic maniac dressed as Santa Claus arrives to deliver some holiday cheer. Or maybe that's fear. The insane Santa Claus starts slashing his way through the house and the gory body count begins. So you better watch out, as this Santa knows if you've been bad or good. So be good, for goodness sake." Jennifer Runyon, in her film debut, stars in this 1980 slasher cult horror favorite, directed by David Hess, Krug, in Wes Craven's Last House on the Left, and written and produced by Alex Rebar, the incredible Melting Man. Now see it in glorious HD for the first time ever. So as I said, that's the back of the Kino Lorber Scorpion release, which came out a couple of years ago. which was a joy to behold because finally you could actually see some of the stuff that was happening in the film. It's a film that's quite, it's utterly trashy, and it has a potential to be utterly boring, but there's just enough silliness in there and bizarre moments to make it eminently rewatchable. And I think this would be in the upper echelons of my favorite Christmas themed slasher movies. Not quite as good as Black Christmas, obviously, but I think it's on a par with something like Silent Night, Deadly Night for me. It doesn't have that much festive atmosphere, I have to say, you know, unlike something like Black Christmas. It doesn't feel terribly Christmassy, possibly because it's filmed in California and it looks very sunny outside all the time. You know, and even one of the characters at one point chimes in with, it sure doesn't feel like Christmas at one stage. But I do find lots to enjoy in the film, regardless of its shortcomings. It opens with the fastest and clumsiest prank gone wrong ever in a slasher movie. There's just some girl being chased up some stairs with people shouting, "Sorority, sorority." It's kind of like prom. It reminded me of the Prom Night prologue, except it's all done within about 20 seconds. So, I mean, David Hess can't be accused of just getting to the point, I suppose. For me, the real WTF factor that makes this film rewatchable is the character of Leah, because it's like she's like a character who's wandered in from the set of Skullduggery, because she's just incredibly bizarre and everything she does is weird. She's incapable of just not going through a scene without dancing or singing. Every scene she's sort of twirling, singing, holding aloft her vol-au-vents, as Justin says in his review on Hysteria Lives. And of course, that bizarre last 15 minutes where she turns into, again, quoting from Justin's review on Hysteria Lives, she turns into a kind of a Kate Bush type character, which goes into a catatonic state and she starts sort of waving her arms around. She, like in the early part of the film, she reminded me very much of that stand-up comedian character in Curtains played by Lynn Griffin. I can't remember the character's name. So again, like with these low budget slashers, it's the kind of peripheral characters that I'm attracted to. You know, there's nothing wrong with Jennifer Runyon as the lead. I think she's a good actress and, you know, she's a sympathetic character, but she's just kind of a stereotypical goody two shoes final girl. And so she's the character's a tad bland. It's the background characters are much more enjoyable, including is she a potty mouth, the English girl, Trisha? I know we'll be speaking more about Trisha later because somebody on this podcast is a particular fan of hers. David Hess is not a great director from what I can see on the evidence of this movie. Now, he has a limited budget to work with, but to me it looks like he got to the editing suite and it's like there was 14 canisters of film had gone missing. The Doris Wishman film we covered, A Night to Dismember, didn't that have a famous sort of background where sort of a third of the film got destroyed in the processing lab, and so she was only left with sort of 20 minutes to cobble together a movie. And that's what To All a Good Night sometimes feels like. It's weird because sometimes it looks kind of professional and then other times it looks incredibly cheap, and then other times it feels like there's whole scenes or insert shots missing. But I suppose it just adds to the appeal of the film. The 2014 Blu-ray that I've watched is, as I said, a revelation because it's crystal clear. Now the one thing that makes it particularly odd, though, is that all the day for night shots don't seem to have been color corrected or processed right, because you see scenes of the girls wandering around with torches late at night but it's gloriously sunny. It's like it was shot at midday. And it makes it very odd and very skullduggery like. So for me, I would say that the film is very entertaining in spite of itself, and it's very reminiscent of Friday the 13th in many places, particularly in the final 15 minutes. There's something very Friday the 13th happens, but from what I've found, it was actually filmed not long after Friday the 13th wrapped, but before Friday the 13th was released. So it must be just a coincidence that. But I will eventually get to the spoilers as we always do on the podcast, but I won't say anything more about it for now. But one person who is a big fan of To All a Good Night, I think, is our guest, Amanda Reyes. Amanda?
Yes, I'm actually a big fan. I've had a VHS copy. I actually don't have the Blu-ray. I have it on VHS. I've had my copy for years. It's signed by David Hess.
Oh, wow.
And when I met him at a convention, I brought the video with me, and I said, "I love this movie." And he goes, "You do?" It was kind of our entire interaction. It was really strange. I kept thinking he was going to rape me. So I was really terrified of him the whole time because I'd only known him as like a rapist at that point and as the director of this really oddball film. And he didn't offer any information on it. He was just like, you want me to put your name? And he wrote my name and signed it. And I cried and took it back to my house. So, but I'm obsessed with this movie because it is really weird. I agree with Eric that the direction is really choppy. I think the biggest problem with the film is the script. And I'm just going to go really obtuse here, but there's this thing called semiotics. I don't know if anybody's familiar with it, but it's kind of like the theoretical study of language. And the whole point of it is that we assign words to objects, like a table, but the word table actually means nothing. It's just a word that we've all agreed will mean what a table is, so we can identify it. I feel like this movie, at least the first 20 to 30 minutes, is a study in semiotics because none of it makes sense. Words make no sense. Like, they start in the middle of conversations and you get one or two sentences and then they start a new conversation and then they end it before the conversation actually ends. So you actually have no idea what anybody's talking about. It has really random, like one of my favorite lines is from Trisha, who is one of my favorite characters in the film. But like they're having dinner and they're saying how these boys are going to come visit. And she said, could you bring me some perfume, please? The Chanel. And it's like, I often put on Chanel while I eat stew. Like, none of it makes sense. And he's in the middle, you know, the one guy that shows up and he's singing that song Vagabond.
Yes.
Like, he's just in the middle of the song.
Well,
like,
singing is probably being a bit too kind to him, I think.
Yeah, I will. I think you're right. And so there's something really hypnotic about the introduction of the characters because they don't seem to really like each other, but you can't really tell why because none of them have a full conversation that goes anywhere. And it's like this really bizarre movie, but it also starts off with murders really quickly. And I think, you know, the Cynthia character, who's the girl that's supposed to be sick and she's upstairs and she takes off her top in front of the window, even though her boyfriend can't see it. And then she kind of stands there for a minute and then she gets stabbed to death, you know, and like that's a kind of a brutal scene. For some reason, that really upsets me. I'm not sure why, but I think it's just because she's walking out in the dark and then she gets stabbed once in the chest and it's like over. And nobody even thinks about her the next day. Like when their friends are missing, Cynthia never comes up in the conversation. She like doesn't exist as a person. And like it's such a really weird, strange film. And that's kind of why I like it. I do want to say I think Leah is a petri dish. I think she has way too much sex with way too many guys. And I don't understand why she has sex with the cop because he's totally disgusting. And I don't understand why she didn't bathe beforehand because you know what I mean? Cause she just had sex with TJ. Right. So,
yes.
I mean, I'm totally offended. I'm totally offended by her, but, and I also think like Eric said, the Christmas setting is really incidental. Like, I don't even know why they set it at Christmas. It doesn't make nothing in this movie makes sense, but then there's like, really self-aware moment. So the really geeky character who plays like the love interest, oh, I'm forgetting his name. Is it Alex?
Alex, yeah.
Before he has sex with Melody, when they're sitting on the couch together, he's playing with this napkin and the napkin is sort of very phallic and he's rubbing it up and down like he's masturbating. And he's, and do you know what I'm talking about? And she says, he says, I've had too much to drink. And she's like, you've had half a beer. And she's trying to get him to come to bed with him. And there's like a really funny self-aware moment. And there's another moment like that I'm forgetting in the film. And it's like, it's kind of like there are just really lucid moments where they kind of know what's happening. And then the rest of the time, it's like David Hess didn't even know where to point the camera. So I'm really fascinated by it. So in short, what I think it is, I think it's a really weird oddity, but I also think it's kind of brutal. And I like that it has killing sparsed pretty evenly throughout the film. And I like that Fast Ralph is a man of the land. So I give it a thumbs up. Yeah. I don't know if any of that made sense, by the way.
It
I wrote
did.
A bunch of stuff down. I don't, this is
the first time ever semiotics has been discussed in this podcast.
Yes, it's very intelligent.
Yes, we don't usually go to those depths.
No. But I mean, nothing makes the words don't make sense. The words do not make sense in this movie. They're strung together, but they mean nothing. I mean, it's empty. And if I was snootier and had a stronger academic background, I would write my thesis paper on it.
What were you going to say, Justin? Sorry, you were saying something there.
Oh, no, I was just making a smutty innuendo. But I was just saying that we've discussed semi other things.
You see, that's the level of this podcast.
Yes, usually it's the level.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, well, I'm sorry, real quick. I just also want to say, can we be spoilery about the revelation?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, so something really funny. So I watched this movie 3 times, and I watched it once with my husband. And one thing we thought was really funny was at the end, you know, when it's revealed that it's the, I don't know what she is, she's not their house mother, right? She's the caretaker?
Like, yeah, something like that, the cook or something, yeah.
Is the killer, and then she gets killed, and then we find out that the cop that was like the chief of police is her husband. And he said, you killed my wife or whatever. And we said it would be really funny if, like, people just kept coming up to Jennifer Runyon. They're like,
yeah.
She was my third cousin. And then there's just all these, like, bodies and Santa suits throughout the house. Yeah. That's the ending I wanted.
That would have been a brilliant ending.
Yeah. That would have been great.
Nathan, this is probably a film that's right up your street.
Oh, God, it's incredible. Like, I absolutely adore To All a Good Night. And I totally understand what Amanda is saying, because, like, when I was watching it, I kept thinking, I feel like I'm watching, like, somebody's, like, nightmare, because, you know, it's got some atmosphere, but it also makes no sense. You know, a lot of it doesn't make sense. Like she said, the conversations are kind of odd and stilted, and, you know, some of the dialogue, you know, is hysterical. Like, Jennifer Runyon's character cracks me up in this movie, because it's almost like she's like an over-the-top version of a good final, like a virginal final girl. Like, it's almost like David Hess did every possible thing he could do to make her as innocent as she possibly could be. Like, that scene where she's talking to the detective who ends up being one of the killers, and she just looks up and she's like, I'm really scared. And she's like, I may be crazy, but I'm really scared. And I was like, well, no kidding, you're scared. You just found out, like, there's been a murder and the killer's on the loose.
Yeah, but she's the only one who seems to be scared, though. The rest of them
just... Everybody else is like, oh, it's no big deal. Yeah. But you know, our friends are missing, too. Whatever.
She puts her hair in pigtails afterwards. Yeah. Like, just be that much more, like, a little kid girl. Yeah.
And I love her trying to rationalize with Mrs. Jensen at the end, when Mrs. Jensen's like, you were there, Nancy. And she's like, no, I only came last year. I didn't know your daughter. I mean, she's like, whoops. I really didn't know. I thought that Leah's whole dancing thing, like, at the end, I like it. I know a lot of people, like, have commented about it, you know, and some people have brought it up in a negative way, but I liked it. I thought it was interesting that the killer basically scared her into going insane and decided to let her live.
Well, she was halfway there already, even before anything.
Yeah, she's a little crazy to begin with, but but I kind of agree with Amanda as well. I'm like, I can't believe she ditched TJ, you know, who, you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, I mean, he's, you know, the cuter guy of the two, and he's obviously rich. I mean, he's got his own plane, you know, and I think she even mentions, like, earlier in the movie that, you know, he's really rich, and then she just decides to randomly cheat on him the next night. I mean, it just seems so odd, especially when she could so easily be caught, which she was. And speaking of TJ, I thought his death was very brutal. The wire around his neck, and the killer, like, in the tree pulling the wire up, which is interesting because the killer couldn't have got up that tree with them being against it. So how did the killer even know that they would go to that tree? So, I mean, you just kind of camped out in that tree waiting, I guess, and hoping that somebody would come and, you know, lean against the tree so he could use his wire. But I mean, that's just that convenience in slasher movies. You know, it's like in, like, Curtains or in Friday the 13th Part 5, when a character backs up against a tree, like, the killer just happens to know which tree they're going to back up against. Its movies are very convenient for the killer. I think the Santa Claus outfit is really good. I think it's actually very creepy. Like, the mask, the Santa mask, I think is very creepy. And I love that the killer uses a wide variety of weapons. And another death scene I thought was very brutal is the British girl. God, what is her name? I keep forgetting. Trisha.
Yeah.
Trisha.
The queen.
When she, you know, when she's like, oh, take that bloody mask off and take it to bed. And he...
Justin, don't interrupt Nathan. He starts to...
Justin, how dare you? But when she gets her throat cut, and it almost looks like the killer pulls her throat back so it'll open even wider. And I'm like, that was just kind of an moment because it looked very painful. I would say that I kind of, even though I love the movie, I do kind of understand what you guys are saying about, you know, the direction in it, because I feel like there's no real sense of urgency. Like, even in the climactic scenes, it doesn't have that sense of suspense to me. It's more like, you know, it's all the suspense of, let's say, two people walking around the house, like the ending to The Last Slumber Party, where the girl, you know, spends all her time walking around the house after finding her dead friends. You know, I mean, that's not exactly what happens, but that's the kind of sense of urgency I get from this movie as well. The airplane propeller death, amazing scene. I mean, has any other slasher movie done that? That's fantastic.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Is that a slasher movie?
Well, I'm sure Joseph would be able to justify it.
Okay, well, all I got to say is amazing movie, nightmarish, atmospheric, high body count, 10 out of 10, easily.
Mm. One thing I forgot to mention when I was talking about it there was, is it just me, or do they make it plainly obvious who the killer is quite early on by having a picture of the dead girl in this person's bedroom?
And when you think about it, I mean, who else could it even be? Because a lot of times you'll see a death and then it'll cut to like a dinner scene where almost all the characters are like sitting around a table or something. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess it's not any of them.
Joseph.
Okay, well, I had seen this movie a few times throughout the years on clunky VHS. And as we all know, it's very dark. So I think seeing this on Blu-ray kind of cleaned up. It's done it a few favors, but it's also kind of a hindrance because you see how bad some of the effects are, and you know, none more so than the falling body at the beginning, which is obviously a mannequin. I'm kind of half and half on this. I liked a lot of the incidental dialogue, the kind of existential kind of talking into nowhere, as Amanda put it. I think the action scenes are very, very poorly done. Like, David Hess has no earthly idea how to block a scene, how to frame a shot. It doesn't feel like it had a proper editor. Basically, in the action scenes, the killer will kind of attack someone, and he'll kind of stumble around a little bit, and there's no real sense of urgency. I found the kooky dialogue scenes more interesting than the slasher stuff, if I'm honest. I was actually more enthralled with what someone might or might not say next, more so than the next murder, which is it's not really what I'm looking for in a slasher film. I mean, sometimes you get movies, Pieces or Nail Gun Massacre, where you kind of get off on that whole bad aesthetic, but here I'm watching a Santa slasher, so I kind of want to see some kind of, you know, go for broke kills. And here it's really very clumsy, very clumsily handled. So I'm kind of half and half on the film. It's one of those I watched it last night, and I'm kind of hard pressed to remember a whole lot about it outside the kind of weirdness it has going on. So marginal thumbs down for me. I'm with some affection, but. It's not something I'd want to watch over and over. It's, I would gladly watch it, you know, once a year, like for holiday sakes, if it were like paired with something else. But, you know, on its own, it's kind of hard for me to get into. I don't know. It's just something about it. It's missing, you know, it's got the unintentional comedy. It's got the, the unintentional weirdness, which I like, but, I don't know. It's just missing that kind of extra oomph for me. So, I'm half and half. I'll just say I won't give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. I'll just kind of say it right down the middle. So that's my tuppence.
Ooh, Justin.
Mm. Well, I've got the Blu-ray, and it is a kind of revelation to see, certainly to be able to see what's going on, because some of the scenes on the VHS were so dark, it was just literally one of those things, just looking up what was a dark screen with smudges moving around in it. So to being able to see some of the gore effects, which are actually pretty well done, some of them, I mean, it's kind of cheap, but quite effective. Has anyone mentioned the suit of armour yet?
No, but it reminded me of Slaughter Hotel. Yeah.
It reminded me of Rabid Grannies.
Well, it was just this idea that you've got this killer who would get into a whole suit of armour, wrap themselves up in a suit of armour completely, and just on the off chance that a couple of teenagers come in and have sex in the room. Because there's no chance that you couldn't just sneak in dressed in a suit of armor or put a suit of armor once somebody's already in the room. So it was this, yeah, it was kind of the kind of ridiculousness of it, which of course is glorious in a lot of ways. Again, it's an old movie. It's a very strange movie, and it's I don't imagine for a minute there was a passion project for David Hess. I imagine that he was offered this and he wanted to direct, so he probably jumped at a chance. It's not a film he probably, you know, particularly wanted to do, but gave him an opportunity to get behind the camera for once. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's all over the place in a lot of ways. I mean, the fact is, it's one of the other oddities. It's kind of one of the only slasher movies that has a first and second half, in so much you have the murders, the opening scene, which again is talked about. Jason talked about the mannequin, which is as bad as the mannequin, if not worse than the one in Dr. Butcher MD. When the mannequin hits the floor, falling out the hospital window, and the arm flies off, it was kind of it was just fake looking at that. But again, fantastic. It was, it kind of you have the murders first half of the murders in the first half of the movie, and then it cuts to the second day. And as we've mentioned before, nobody seems particularly bothered that half of the cast has sort of disappeared, and people just presume they're off screwing somewhere or doing something. But there's no sense of urgency or until Crazy Ralph is bumped off. And again, it's kind of those weird coincidences with this film was released in January of 1980, so a long time before Friday the 13th was released. But you've got the Crazy Ralph character in this, and he's almost not quite the same character, but certainly similar. I suppose Crazy Ralph and Friday the 13th was meant to be a bit of a red herring, wasn't he? And so this guy, you can immediately, I guess you're supposed to think that because he's a bit eccentric, he's going to be the killer. There's a lot to love in this film. I mean, it is not a great film. It's not the kind of film I probably would show non-aficionados of the slasher movie. It's not a film I would show to an audience who was kind of, I think a lot of people just wouldn't get it. It's because it's almost like an experimental art film crossed with a very cheesy slasher movie. So it's odd and all over the place, but it's got enough weirdness to it to it kind of lifts it out of a rut. And also, I think when it actually finally gets into that last half an hour, it does pick up the momentum. There are it has that frisson of kind of excitement, which is kind of missing from a lot of the earlier parts of the movie, which are kind of quite pedestrian. There's very little suspense. It's like literally walking up and saying, "Oh, it's you," or bumping into the killer and getting an axe in the head. And as much as that's fun to see, there's no great suspense in it. And again, of course, all the night for day stuff is kind of bizarre, is hilarious, because especially towards the end of the film, it actually gets almost like it, when Trish, I think, runs out to Harry Reams by the aeroplane, and it's clearly dawn, or kind of very close to being dawn. It was kind of getting light, and we cut back to the house. It's dark again. It's just that lack of attention to detail is quite awe-inspiring, really. It kind of fits in, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. It kind of obviously fits into that Sandy Kobe, I don't know how to pronounce it, but all the Home Sweet Home and Terror on Tour and all those other films that were being machine-gunned out around about the same time. It has that kind of certain, kind of like an auteur type feel to it, in so much as they're very much a cut from the same cloth. It's difficult to know in retrospect now that this film is, 37 years old, whether or not it was shot tongue-in-cheek. David Hess had a sense of humour about it. I don't know, but certainly it's an eccentric film, and so that's why there's, you know, that's something to cherish about it.
Said. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Benda.
I was just gonna say, do you think TJ made Harry Reem sleep outside because he knew that he'd be the best lay in the house?
Oh, he's probably jealous.
Possibly. Yeah.
It's funny that you mention Justin. Like, you probably wouldn't show it to like somebody who's not necessarily a slasher fan, because I watched this with Wes, who isn't a slasher fan at all, and he was done with the movie like 30 minutes into it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? He was just like, okay, I've seen enough. And in his description, even though I love the movie, I kind of agree with, you know, one thing he said. He goes, it feels like they just set a camera up, told these people to have random conversations, and then, there's just some killings going on, like, also. Mm. Like, because a lot of it feels just so very random. Like, nothing's very really advancing the plot. Mm. It's just, okay, now this happens, then this happens, then this happens. Then she gets perfume for Stu. Then.
Well, as you do.
Yeah. You got to smell your best. You don't want to smell like Stu for later when, you know, the guys are there.
Yeah. Well, that's actually somewhat logical.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm putting too much logic into the film.
Well, the other thing that's kind of bizarre.
I'd want my girlfriend to smell like Stu.
I like Stu.
I like Stu.
I was going to say the other thing which kind of made me chuckle was that the death of the sorority girl had only happened like 2 years earlier. No one knew about it, and the cook, or you know, the killer, or one of the killers, was you know, had been hired to be the cook at the house where her daughter had been killed by sorority girls 2 years later. I was wondering about her references, you know, so what they would have actually said. So I'm applying for this job because my daughter died, so I want to kill some teenagers in 2 years.
Yeah.
My husband hypothesized that she had actually been there the whole time, and it's just that nobody cared. Like, they were so self-centered that they didn't even put the two together that her daughter was that girl, because her picture is in the room.
Mm-hmm. You know, that gives the movie some depth.
That's what we do when we watch these movies. I thought that was kind of poignant. I was like, what if that's kind of what they were hinting at?
Well, you know, she ended up dying in the same manner as her daughter. But what was weird is her death was just as clunky, though, as her daughter's, because it's like she's like coming at Jennifer Runyon with the knife, and then the next thing you know, she's laying on the ground outside the house. So I'm like,
that balcony looks like it's only one floor up as well. I don't know what, it's just the way it's shot, it makes me feel like it's not very high off the ground.
I think it is.
I mean, if Omar from The Wire can take a 10-story plunge, why can't she just drop, you know, one story and live?
Well, technically, the villain of it is whoever the maintenance person is that let the railing get so crap. You know what I mean? Because that's really what happened. It was just bad railing.
I'm interested to know what the sorority prank was. I mean, they were chasing this girl around at the start, just screaming the word sorority. It was just bizarre.
She also says at the end that they gave her drugs too.
Mm. Oh. But they also, if you notice, like they had an axe.
Prom night with the killer is coming, but was saying sorority. So.
Well, they were scaring her, weren't they? Because one of them had an axe, and the one of them shouted out, "Chop her head off." So I think that's why she was a bit scared.
Lord, if they had given her, like, acid or something and she was tripping and, you know, they were saying chop her head off and stuff, no wonder she fell off the balcony.
Yeah, I know.
That's terrible. I meant to mention that I love the girl's scream, the one that gets killed by the suit of armor, like the killer in the suit of armor. Mm. Like, she has the most interesting scream to me. It's very much a, like, her mouth is open and it's silent, and then, like, this piercing sound comes out, and then it's like almost silent again. Like, her scream is very interesting. It's like probably the only person that paid attention to that.
It's like someone put a noise gate in post, like on the front of her scream and the end of her scream, so it's just like it's like a quick sound.
The music in this movie is great.
Can I just ask, why does the killer not kill Leah? Why is she spared?
Because she's torturing everybody else
with her dancing.
It's like their own death.
Yeah. This is your own private hell. Leah dancing and singing for all eternity.
I love the other thing I love is the, you know, when TJ gets killed with the piano wire over the thing. Is it Melody, isn't it? He's out there with...
She just runs off.
Well, she just kind of... Her face, because she gets sprayed in blood, doesn't she? And then if you look at her face, she kind of like... It's rather than... She screams, but then she makes a face like, ooh, icky. Like that, and sort of as if someone's like splashed her with some mud, and then she kind of just saunters off. But she doesn't look, you know, she
leave me alone.
Exactly, it was a little bit like that.
What Eric was saying though about, you know, she just runs off like while he's being killed, and later when the killer confronts them in the house, like Melody just leaves. She runs to the plane. It's like, sorry, Nancy, you're dealing with this on your own.
Yeah. Well, I love the fact that she runs over to Harry Reams, has a breakdown, and then runs back to the house. No, she runs to the house first, doesn't she? I can't, whichever way around it is, but when she gets, Alex slaps her. You know, she has a we're all going to die.
Because I kind of heard the sound, and I'm like, did he just slap her?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
I also think Alex is kind of a twerp because Melody is so nice to him, and he loses his virginity to her, and then the next day it's all about Nancy. And it's like, Alex, you just had the chance of a lifetime. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden he's like, I can have any girl on the sorority. Mm-hmm. And it really bugs me, even though I love Alex.
Yeah, he goes from like nerd to stud in record
time. That's right. I think the Rams are going to win the Super Bowl.
So do I, actually, while we're at it. I think who do you think is going to win the Super Bowl, Justin?
Tottenham Hotspur?
Yeah. Oh, Justin.
I've no idea.
Yeah. Okay, so... Okay.
Well, should we do a little bit of background? If we've got any.
Yes. Yes.
I have a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a little bit as well.
Should I go?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so I have like a page here. So according to Rotten Reels, which is a website, To All a Good Night was shot at a mansion in Santa Barbara that Hess had claimed once belonged to a drug dealer. Now, I looked up, I spent some time yesterday actually looking up mansions in Santa Barbara, and I couldn't find this mansion. I'm obsessed with this location because I think it's really beautiful. And it's like Justin said, the Alex Rebar who wrote this, all of his movies, Demented, I don't know about so much about Terror and Terror, but Home Sweet Home, all their houses look like Mexican restaurants. And I assumed it was the same house, but they're not. I actually watched all three movies yesterday, like parts of them to get the facades, and they're all different houses, but they all look alike and they're really interesting to me. So I don't know if they're all shot in Santa Barbara or not. According to Rotten Reels as well, this movie was shot for $70,000 on Aeroflex cameras. Now I have read that the budget was also $40,000, so I don't know which one of those is correct, but that's awfully low either way. And according to a site called Schmollywood Babylon, David Hess had actually been looking for who owned the rights to All a Good Night around the time that DVD was making it big. But then he passed away before he could see it come out into another medium other than VHS. So I think he may have been somewhat invested in the film in that I think he was looking to put it out in a medium that would clean it up a little for him. Because you're right, the VHS copy is pretty horrid. I don't mind it so much because I own so much VHS and I watch a lot of TV movies as well. I'm used to shit quality. But when it's cleaned up, it actually looks kind of nice. Like you feel like they actually maybe had a cinematographer. The effects artist Mark Schustrom also worked on The Mutilator and Nightmare on Elm Street, among many other films. This was his first film. And the cinematographer also actually worked on Deep Throat 2, which also starred Harry Reams, who, as we know, is in this film. And Reams and screenwriter Alex Rebar worked together on both this film and Demented, where Reams has a much bigger part, where I wrote a hem because, you know, bigger part. And
you are a missus.
I don't know if you guys have seen Demented, but he's really good in it. He plays the husband of the lead character. I actually think he's really handsome, mustache or not. And I kind of wish he had been in To All a Good Night more because he's a pretty good actor. And I don't know how many legit films he did, but, I think he's not bad. Rebar, as I mentioned, was the writer. He was known for producing, acting, and writing. And he did this, Home Sweet Home, Terror on Tour, and Demented. Which I mentioned all kind of have a similar aesthetic. As an actor, Rebar is best known for starring in The Incredible Melting Man. Although most of his work was on episodic television, he also appeared in a TV movie sequel, Amityville, The Evil Escapes, which actually Nate and I covered with our friend Dan on my podcast, The Made for TV Mayhem Show. Variety claimed in its 1983 VHS review that To All a Good Night had never had a theatrical release. It was a negative review, but stated that the acting was passable. Let me get to the next page. The reviewer also commented that the Christmas set horror films at that time had proved to be unpopular and likened that theme to the reason why the film sat on the shelf until 1983. The girl who plays Melody, her name is Linda Gentile or Gentile, but if you look her up and you add a second L to her last name, you'll find that she is actually a pretty noted concert pianist, and she's performed in China more than any other Western artist, according to her website. And what's really interesting about that fact is that, you know that scene where the guy's singing Vagabond?
Yep.
And she's like, wow, that's really good. And then she makes this face and you're like, I actually think she knows what's good and not. She's actually a very noted musician. Jennifer Runyon, of course, may be the most famous actor in the film. Although her career only ran for roughly 13 years, she is best known for playing Gwendolyn Pierce on Charles in Charge and for playing Cindy Brady in A Very Brady Christmas, which Nate and I also covered on my podcast. She's married to Roger Corman's nephew, and she actually recently reemerged on IMDb and has a few upcoming horror movies coming out. And she's pretty active on Twitter and has tweeted about this movie, so I don't think she's ashamed of it. And David Hess was also a songwriter, as many of us know, and he penned the tune Speedy Gonzales, which was recorded by Pat Boone. Apparently, Elton John liked that song so much he used portions of it when he wrote Crocodile Rock. And that's my trivia.
Excellent. I didn't know David Hess was to blame for Crocodile Rock. Wow.
Yes.
Okay, Nathan, do you have any feedback?
I do have some feedback. Oh. Well,
No, that's not the right answer.
Yes. Oh, I know. No, but yes.
But not feedback. Background.
Not feedback. Background.
Oh, what? Did I say feedback?
You did.
Yeah. You said feedback, but it's background.
Oh, Eric.
God, Eric.
So, as it was mentioned...
I'm just going to do my Leah dance.
It's like Curly, right? Doesn't it like morph itself into Curly from the Three Stooges when you're doing it? Wada-dee, wada-da. That's how I envision her.
Her dancing for her boyfriend earlier in the movie was kind of weird too. Like it just kept going for a while, and I was thinking, I bet TJ's like, okay, enough.
As an aside, Eric does look like Curly with a beard.
Hey,
Eric Curly in one episode, he played played a wrestler. He was filling in for a big bear wrestler named Bustoff.
Okay.
And when he puts the fake beard on, it really does look like you.
Okay, let me Google it while Nathan's giving us his...
B-U-S-T-O-F-F. Bust off.
Okay, so Harry Reams, we talked about before, played the pilot. Jennifer Runyon had no idea about, you know, his porn career until someone on the set told her. This was Jennifer Runyon's first film, and she auditioned with her then-boyfriend, Forrest Swanson, who plays Alex. Maybe
that
that's why
boyfriend?
He gained interest. Yeah, it was her boyfriend at the time.
Wow.
The entire cast stayed at the mansion during the shoot. Let's see. David Hess knew, what is her name? Harrington. What's her first name?
Catherine.
Catherine. Because I know that she used a different name. Yes, but yeah, her name is Catherine. Yeah. Is that her real name, right? But she recommended Jennifer Runyon for the part in the lead. So apparently on the Blu-ray, she speaks very kindly about Jennifer Runyon on her interview. I actually don't have the Blu-ray, which I'm very sad to say. I want to see this movie cleaned up. I was watching the old VHS when I rewatched it. Judy Hess plays Mrs. Ranzoni, or Ranzini, however Leah wants to say it. And, you know, from what I've read, she was David Hess's mother. And what's interesting is when you look at the credits at the end, she's credited as Mr. Ron Sony. So take that for what you will.
Hmm.
And that's the background that I have.
Okay, Joseph?
Okay, just a little bit. They've covered most of it, but apparently it was shot in 10 days. The film was apparently given a limited theatrical release in the United States on January 30th of 1980.
I saw that as well, which is wouldn't be weird releasing a Christmas-themed film at the end of January.
Yeah, I guess they didn't have too much faith in it since a lot of stuff gets dumped in January. But it was by Intercontinental Releasing Corporation. It was released on VHS in the United States, as we all know, in 1983 by Media Home Entertainment. Overall, critically, it was poorly received, as we know. All Movies' Eleanor Manica called it an undistinguished cliched slasher film. And that's pretty much all I have on the background.
I got that was filmed in 10 days as well. And this was Alex Rebar on the Blu-ray said it was, they started filming it in November of, I'm guessing, 1979. And then it was supposedly ready for release at the end of January, which it's a very short turnaround, so I'm not sure if he's got his dates right there. The other thing he mentioned is that apparently they were going to sell it to a major in kind of a deal like Friday the 13th did later in the year, but the major they were dealing with would not accept it because Harry Reams was in the film. and he had his background as a porn star. Catherine Harrington, apparently, did you mention, Nathan, that she was also in Schizoid with Klaus Kinski and Donna Wilkes? So she's in that as well. So that's, I think everyone else has covered all the background I have. Justin, do you have any more?
You've pretty much covered everything, but the only thing that I've got that hasn't been discussed is that Kia Lawrence, who played Mrs. Jensen, who is one of the killers, she was also in Schizoid the same year.
I just said that.
Oh, did you? Sorry, I wasn't listening.
I just said that like 10 seconds ago. Oh my God. Why not exist to you? Do you just tune out every time I speak?
So he's like Jan Brady.
Are you
invisible?
I feel like I am Jan Brady.
Sorry, I had to go.
Well, you went a little more Inga there than you did during the game.
Were you doing that as a joke, Justin, or did you genuinely not hear me say that?
I genuinely didn't hear you say it, only because I had to. I was a cat was trying to get in, so I had to go and sort of push them out of the way, stop them. Okay. So apologies
for this time.
Yes, thank
Justin.
You. Yes.
Did you know? Did this movie actually not get a theatrical release, or did it?
Well, this is kind of something that I think is quite interesting because I've never seen a one sheet for it. I've never seen a theatrical poster. So I don't know is the honest answer, because I've seen the same sources that Joseph has saying it got the a limited theatrical release. And it may well have done. I mean, it may have played like 5 movie houses in Los Angeles for 1 week or something. I just don't know. But certainly, I don't believe that like Home Sweet Home didn't get a theatrical release. I don't think Terror on Tour did either. And they all filmed around about the same time. I think this predates all of them by a little bit. So I don't know, because it's too early in the cycle, isn't it, really, to be have made just for home video?
Yeah.
I think. You know, so
that's what I would be thinking,
yeah. I mean, it's kind of one of, well, I think it's really interesting that it kind of predates Friday the 13th in so much it's doing a very Friday the 13th style thing. And it's kind of, I mean, out of all the other kind of Christmas slashers, like Christmas Evil was the same year, wasn't it? But again, that's kind of very atypical. But it kind of has that kind of body count feel to it of Friday the 13th. But it must have been inspired by the success of Halloween.
And Catherine Harrington is just an absolute dead ringer. Well, not a dead ringer physically, but character-wise for Mrs. Voorhees at the end, where she's going, "You killed my daughter."
Mm. I think it is curious. I think it's one of those mysteries. I mean, if anyone out there's seen a poster for it, because I'm surprised I've never seen one in all my years of looking for movie posters. And I have got like movie posters of films that have got. Sometimes even for films will get a movie poster done and never actually get a release. They'll do it as a kind of promotional thing to try and get it out there. So I don't know. It's one of those mysteries. But I wouldn't be surprised if it did play a movie house somewhere. It was obviously shot on film, wasn't it, rather than on video. Mm. Did anyone mention about Mark Sjostrom as well? Did special effects, didn't he?
Amanda mentioned that.
Yeah, did. Okay. Well, it's kind of... Yeah, I mean, he went on to... He did Alone in the Dark, didn't he? And a number of other
Evil Dead 2.
Evil Dead 2, of course, yes. Yeah. So he cut his teeth on this, which was kind of... and I actually thought the special effects were pretty good when you actually saw them, you know, especially the kind of slit throats and things like that.
Yeah.
They were actually quite... You know, because quite often you get a slit throat like... I mean, the worst slit throat is something like The Last Slumber Party, isn't it, where you've got like a joke scalpel with some blood trickling down. But this was actually some proper special effects work, and the axe to the head when the Santa kills the copper, then that's, you know, they're all pretty well done, I thought.
The one dud effect I would say is the severed head on the shower head,
yeah,
which looks a bit chunky, but
yeah I do
you know it's really oh go ahead
No, I was saying I do love the scene where they find that, and then Alex is trying not to be sick. He gets to go dry heaving.
And they're standing there for ages. Yeah,
I know. But it's great to see these films cleaned up and put out with such, I do remember the VHS, and in fact, I actually had it on Dutch VHS, and so it even had Dutch subtitles, which made it even more difficult to see what's going on. But then. My VCR chewed it up and completely mangled the tape, so I've just still got the tape in the box, but I haven't been able to watch it for ages, so getting the Blu-ray was a revelation. I definitely recommend anyone picking that up, because it's a great little piece, and it's a fun movie, so I'm glad we've covered it, finally.
I expect everybody to hate this, except me and Nate.
Yeah, me too. I think the thing is, Amanda, I've subjected them to movies that are probably so bad that movies like these look great in comparison.
I think that's it exactly. Yeah.
It's like I've lowered the tolerance level.
Well, what I liked about it was, and I mentioned Skullduggery earlier, is that it has that kind of just that weird vibe. It's not as weird as Skullduggery, and very few things are, except maybe Justin. But that's what I bought into, was that just the weirdness of it, which sometimes is lacking in some of Nathan's picks. They're just not weird. They're just boring, and I'm particularly targeting things like Blood Lake and Terror 10 Killer there.
Now, I actually really like both of those films.
What?
Yes, yep, I do. Does.
You're an intelligent lady, Amanda. And we're talking about semiotics, and you like Terror 10 Killer.
Yeah, she's not invited back ever again. I actually prefer Blood Lake of the two, because I love Tony so much. That,
oh, yeah. little Tony. Yeah.
Yeah, I love little Tony so much that I can't help myself. But yeah, I like a lot of Nathan's picks, I have to admit.
My God.
Well,
we're kindred spirits.
Another revelation. So
that's why I assumed everybody would hate this film, because like I used to show this movie to my friend Candy, and I watched this movie To All a Good Night like 50 times one year, because I put it on, she was on the phone, and she just saw that opening 20-second scene where like you get every piece of information you need about that character, and she couldn't stop laughing. And I would play movies and she would just roll her eyes, but there was something about this movie that she, like myself, found very hypnotic. But I mean, I just assumed everybody else kind of hated it. Like even David Hess couldn't believe I liked it.
Well, I would say if I'd seen this for the first time 20 years ago or 15 years ago, I probably would have hated it. But my tolerance for these type of things has increased. Yeah.
It's also,
you know, what I meant. I talked to Rick Sloan, who did Movie House Massacre, and when I told him how much I love that movie, his first question to me was, why?
Because of that usherette that we love. I can't
remember.
Selena, yeah.
We all love her.
Yeah.
Well, of course, the other thing with David Hess was, of course, he was in House on the Edge of the Park in 1980, the same year, the Ruggero Deodato movie, which is a world away from this, really, isn't it? You know,
it's still quite trashy, but yeah, it's quite mean.
It's super
trashy. In a much different way.
But it's good. It's. I think House on the Edge of Park is legitimate. It's like. Oh my God, I can't remember the name of the story now. That reminds of Mice and Men with rapists. That's exactly what it is.
You're really raising the tone of this podcast. Wow.
But I mean, it's really like their relationship. Ricky and David Hess's character. His name Ricky. Giovanna,
yeah, Lombardo Ricci.
Yeah, they have like this really weird friendship, and it's so bizarre where it takes them, and it's wall to wall rape, but it's somehow not offensive. Like I can't figure out how they did that, but it's like an amazing film, and I didn't even realize they came out the same year. So David Hess had quite the year.
One thing about To All a Good Night that I had that I was thinking about when I watched it last night is we see clips of the killer burying all the victims, and I'm like, it's no wonder it takes the killers two nights to kill these people, because if they're burying all these bodies, they're killing a lot of people.
They do. They're very tidy, aren't they? They kind of do tidy up themselves.
You know, yeah. They leave Trisha's blood on the kitchen floor, but I guess they assume that somebody else will clean it up.
That's true.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I guess Fast Ralph cut himself, and then Fast Ralph shows up, and nobody is like, hey, did you cut yourself? Because we found like 3 pounds of blood on the floor.
3 pounds is right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, well, Fast Ralph.
This movie is a gift that just keeps on giving.
It is.
Well, it taught me the interpretive dance of the death of my friends.
Yes.
That's her interpretive dance at the end.
Yeah.
That's why she's dancing. Mm. It's an expression.
Yeah. It is. It's an art installation.
Yes, I was just going to say we're having a lot of fun talking about this movie, but I've noticed we've been talking for an hour and 45 minutes or 43 minutes now. So I think we should go on to some feedback. But I just wanted to mention this is I do think it's quite remarkable that we do have Amanda who's talking about Steinbeck, and then we have Eric talking about the Christmas Pooh movie. So it's just like it's kind of
yeah,
like
it's off the extremes.
Spectrum,
really.
Extremes is the hysteria.
High art and low art are still art.
Exactly.
Yeah, Justin.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, no, of course. I mean, I wouldn't be doing this podcast or my website if I didn't believe the same thing. So, but absolutely, yes. Interesting. Actually, last night at our party, our next door neighbour came round with a little girl, and we started talking about films. She saw my poster for Suspiria, and she said, "Oh, I really want to see that movie." So she's going to come round, and she's really into horror movies. So I gave my book to read. So,
cool.
Another nice 49.
Not old enough.
Well, it's kind of, yeah, so it's kind of, yeah, that's a nice little aside. But, okay, well, let's move on to some feedback. Actually, before we do that, what everyone's been waiting for, of course, is Eric's festive joke of the week.
I don't have a festive joke of the week.
It's my joke of the week. I'm so, so fantastic.
Okay, what? Eric, everyone's been waiting for this.
What's blonde and makes you cry? Jennifer Onion.
That was actually really good on the fly, Eric.
That was pretty good on the fly. So. Sorry to put you on the spot, Eric. But,
you did put me on the spot. I'd completely forgotten about joke of the week.
I know. We hadn't agreed anything, but I just thought a nice little festive treat for our listeners. So,
I forgot one more thing I want to mention, and then I promise I'll stop talking about To All a Good Night. There's a scene, and I don't know if any of you noticed it, and I always wondered whose note it was. Somebody left a note on the fridge in this movie, and the note, you know, says, "If you have to steal my food," and "half" and "steal" is underlined, "have the decency to replace it." And I was wondering, that's just such a funny little thing to add into the
movie. I wonder if this is at one of the foreign language schools maybe that Inga went to, and maybe she was staying there.
Right, that sounds like Inga. Yeah. I always wonder, who wrote that note? Whose food was being stolen?
I think Trisha Stew was being stolen while she was putting on her Chanel number 5.
Perfect. Yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you, everyone. Let's we've actually got a voicemail, and this is titled "Merry Christmas." So I presumably, Joseph, you sent this through. Have you listened to it yet?
Yes, it's from our good friend Kieran Edwards, who's been on the show before.
Kieran, excellent. The voice Edwards.
Yes. Well, let's play this voicemail from Kieran.
Hey guys, I'm just calling to say thanks for another year of great episodes, as we seem to be living in a world that is now, to put it nicely, uncertain. It's a huge comfort knowing that your podcast is all over the interwebs, providing us great entertainment and making me very happy. So, Eric, Justin, Nathan, Joseph, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. All right, I'll talk to you later. Happy holidays, everyone.
Oh, thank you, Kieran. What a lovely message, so, isn't it? Yes.
Now I'm thank off you very to much. Trap Merry people Christmas. In a house. Now he's off to trap people in a house and do stuff to them, their bodies.
Oh, like in Saw?
Yeah. Kieran is the jigsaw guy.
Well,
somebody should have left us a voicemail feedback of, like, Billy from Black Christmas doing one of his phone calls.
But they're too rude.
Oh, I know they are.
Yeah, we're very highbrow in this podcast. Yeah. So.
Well, we are this week in places. not when I'm speaking, but.
Well, do we have? Have we got? What other feedback have we got? Has anyone? I've got a written
piece
here. Got
some Facebook stuff.
Oh yeah, do you want to do the Facebook on "To All a Good Night"? What have people been saying?
Yeah, there's just a couple this week. Dave Rendon says, "I would have preferred Christmas Evil, but this is just as good. One of the few decent holiday slashers set in the West Coast, and the poster art really draws you in. Finally, happy holiday to the Fab Four, or of Fright, Fab Five today. I've made it through yet another year of battling 80s bands, cats flushing toilets, questionable trivia challenges, and rhubarb." That was Dave Rendon. Joshua Grattan says, "Watching the Blu-ray revealed just how cheap the budget really was. I love little quirks like Leia's insanity dance, the British girl melody, Sam's sex scene, and it nails the formula with a high body count. But there's something missing to make it energetic as even most middle-of-the-road early 80s slashers. I prefer Christmas Evil, Don't Open Till Christmas, and the other classic Yuletide killer flicks." That was Joshua Grattan. Alan Lee Dog, we know him, Justin, from Alt Horror, says, "Did you ever do Don't Open Till Christmas? If not, it's a must-do for the future. Brilliantly awful." someone.
If we haven't done it, have we? It's one to do for.
No, we've not.
Maybe for next Christmas.
Yes.
Yeah. Someone named Rogue Scholar, nice name, says, hated this when I first saw it, but the HD remaster turned it around for me completely. Rest in peace, David Hess. Bob Hartshorn says, a Christmas Killer on the Loose epic directed and written respectively by visionaries David You-Know-Who Hess and Alex the Not-So-Incredible Melting Man Rebar? Pinch me, I'm dreaming. Okay, it's pretty safe to say this isn't in the same class as Black Christmas. No shit, Sherlock. He said that, not me. But this most aesthetically unseasonal of Santa slayings has a few things going for it. Rachel Ward protege Trisha brings a smile to my face every time she opens her wooden gob, and marvelous mischievous Leia's off with the fairies dance of trauma has to be one of the most original surreal flourishes ever to be seen in a seasonal slasher flick. The crazy Ralph clone with the garden shears is pretty good value too, as the murderer's skill for suiting and unsuiting a coat of arms without making a sound. Kudos is also due for the use of a plane propeller as a murder weapon and for the gore in general, which is actually pretty good. Most of the cast are decent, and the mix of 80s cheesy synths and trad strings in the music score department adds a nifty touch of schizo charm. It falls flat here and there, and the pacing is often shot to shit. But the fun, not-so-shocking twist, in quotations, payoff and distinctly abrupt and oddly wonky coda make this one a firm festive favorite in our household of horror. And Estelle Phillips replies to Bob and says, don't forget the pilot sleeping under the plane at the mid-film fade to red shot, quality scenes, fun times. And that's all the Facebook feedback we have for To All a Good Night.
Can I piggyback on that last comment real quick?
Sure.
Just because going back to semiotics, what I forgot to add was that one of the things that we studied when we studied semiotics is that there's no language for trauma. So it's really interesting that at the end, Leah loses her ability to speak and only speaks in music and dancing. And that actually also feeds into the paper I'm going to write, which will be out next year.
Oh, very nice. Okay.
Intriguing. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
Is there, I've got, shall I read one I have here from Adolfo? He says, hi, long time listener, first time messenger. I love the drunk cast, but wanted to know if and when you two drink to the point of blackout or sleep, do you feel horror or terror waking up with a cup still filled with the poison of your choice? I usually feel disgust and horror and throw mine down the drain. I want to make sure I wasn't the only one. Keep up the great work, everyone. I'd love to hear a review of The Burning Moon or Sledgehammer. Two great shot and video horrors that would make for a great commentary. Much love, Adolfo. Well, to be honest, I don't think I've ever woken up with a drink in my hands.
No, neither have I.
No. So, but because usually it's gone. But I know Stuart quite often sometimes falls asleep, and then I can see this the glass perilously balanced, and sometimes
yes. It
goes over, and then it's a nasty shock. But I know it's never happened to me because I don't tend to. I'm one of these people that find it really difficult to nap or fall asleep, unless I'm in bed and it's the right time to go to sleep. So I don't. That doesn't really happen to me. But but I wonder, obviously, because I would say that Eric, you probably out of the four of us might have been the drunkest on drunk
that night. That night.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you say that's fair?
Possibly. Fair, yeah. Possibly.
although I think listening back to that episode now, I think we all sound quite. I can definitely hear it in my own voice. I'm glad Drunkcast was a hit. So again, that may be hopefully next Halloween. And actually, I think we'll decide whether or not we do Rob Zombie if we put ourselves through. I'm not really sure. Trouble is doing Rob Zombie movies and being drunk doing it. It could be funny or it just could be painful. It might be more fun to do something like Trick or Treats. I don't know. But we'll see. We'll come on to that a little bit, you know, when we do. But I don't know about you, Amanda. Do you ever wake up with a drink of your poison of your choice in your hand?
Only in my dreams. I really enjoy drinking, but I usually polish it off before I hit the sheets.
Exactly.
Yes, I'm the same. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I know, but actually, Nathan and Joseph, you're usually fairly teetotal, aren't you?
I don't drink. I rarely drink. No. We did get drunk with Amanda a couple of times in Baltimore.
Yes, it was fun.
So we've seen her drunk.
Drinking is not my poison of choice.
Yeah. We know that. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a water person myself.
See, that's what I've meant. Is that I like water.
Mm. Bong water.
Bong water.
How dare you?
Yes, anyway, enough.
Rip this hard bong, dude.
Yeah, enough from cheeks, the cheeks okay, and
I just
of the podcast.
Watched like a little clip because I didn't know what the burning moon was.
Oh, I've seen the burning moon.
Oh god.
And this movie looks incredible. I have to watch it. It looks so unbelievably ridiculous.
I saw that in the cinema.
Torn in half.
Did you?
Well, it was it was a revival screening. They were just projecting it, and it looked like VHS because it's a VHS movie, isn't it? Yeah.
I've not seen it. Is it just like incredibly cheesy?
It's incredibly cheesy and incredibly gory. Yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but
Is it one of those German gore movies?
Yeah, it's German. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
I think it's early 90s. It was made.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Okay. Was there any? Thank you. Is any other feedback?
I don't think so.
No. Okay. Well, thank you for listening to Hysteria Continues. And before we go, Amanda, where can Amanda?
Hold on.
Oh, what?
I got that. Got to finish the game. The game from the previous thing.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, we actually had someone guess it right this time. So I'm going to be giving three clues for a new movie. But the previous winner, who guessed The Incubus, which was the movie I was thinking of, was Joshua Grattan. So he's got 1 point.
Yay.
Okay, the new movie. Here's the three clues for the new movie I'm thinking of. The first is director keyword, stunts. The second clue is the identity of the film's killer might be considered a holy grail. And the third clue is The Hills Have Eyes. So there you go.
Okay, right. Well, thank you. So that's another brain teaser. We've had quite a lot of that already from Joseph today. So we feel your pain. But yes.
Well, I didn't tease my brain too badly because I won quite convincingly.
Okay. Anyway. Amanda is quite regularly writes for Hysteria Lives, and we've got another one of your reviews coming up shortly.
For what movie?
It's Click the Calendar Girl Killer, isn't it?
Oh.
So I promise I will get that up this week. Where can people find you, Amanda, if they want to check out more of your work?
Well, my main hub is madefortvmayhem.com, which is, I mostly write about TV movies. That's my full-time, I guess, writing gig. I have a book coming out, which is on my website. I'll just give you the title again real quickly. It's called Are You in the House Alone? A TV Movie Compendium, 1964 to 1999. Or if you feel fancy, you could ask for the full title, which is Are You in the House Alone? Growing Up with Gargoyles, Giant Turtles, Valerie Harper, The Cold War, Stephen King, and Coed Call Girls. I begged for that title because I wanted to have Coed Call Girls somewhere on the cover of the book. And it's coming out in April. I'm on Twitter and Facebook. Just look for Made for TV Mayhem wherever you go and you'll find me.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Amanda. It's been an absolute pleasure. And we hope we'll have you back on the podcast again in the future, not too distant future.
Thank you so much. I just want to say I was actually really nervous. Because even though I feel like I've known Joe and Nate for forever, I've never spoken to Justin or Eric. And I love you guys. I listen to the show all the time. There's some episodes I haven't heard because I haven't seen the movies yet. But I've listened to every episode twice at least. I think you guys are fantastic. And this meant a lot to me. So thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, it's all Christmas.
Everybody check out Amanda's podcast too.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Yeah. Yeah, and I have a podcast with Nate and our friend Dan Budnick from Bleeding Skull. It's just called The Made for TV Mayhem Show.
Fantastic. Yeah, check it out. It's an amazing show. And yeah, brilliant to have you on, Amanda. And it's been like, like I say, we haven't spoken before, but it's been like old time. So it's good. And I'm sure people have enjoyed listening to this, hopefully. We will be back in the new year. I'm not sure if we've actually chosen a movie for our return.
Well, we'll be back.
Whose pick is it next?
Well, by the time we're back, it'll be our 6-year anniversary, so we'll have to come up with some kind of good movie to pick.
So Rob Zombie's Halloween.
How about the new Rob Zombie 31?
Yeah, maybe not. Okay, well, we will be announcing on the Facebook group. We're also possibly going to be, we are going to be continuing But we may have slightly fewer shows next year just for scheduling. But hopefully that's, you know, it's quality rather than quantity. Although when I say quality, obviously I mean advisedly, because obviously you're listening to Hysteria Continues. But we will be doing, and hopefully, what they also mentioned, Happy Birthday to Me, the Blu-ray will be out. I think it's on December the 12th, so after this podcast. So please do buy, check that out. It looks like it's going to be a great release, and we've got commentary on there. We also have some offers of commentaries going into next year. There's a couple we can't speak about, but yes, we shall be doing some more, hopefully. So thank you for listening, and hope you all have a wonderful Christmas and a great new year, and we look forward to being back with you in 2017. So say goodbye to the good people. And what were you playing out with? We're going to play out with, well, whatever I choose, I can guess.
I wonder if it's going to be some Susie and the Banshees.
Oh, Eric, thank you for that suggestion.
Obviously it's going to be that.
Well, I'm trying to remember actually what we played out of in the past, because I don't want to repeat
Susie and the Banshees.
Susie and the Banshees.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's see. I shall cut together something, but it'll be a lovely little tribute to
why don't we all just send one Christmas song and you put it together?
We could do. Yeah, we could all send a melody. Yeah. Okay, send me some suggestions, and I shall put together those all.
When does this episode go out?
I don't know. This week, yeah. It'll be going out.
Okay.
So, which means nothing to if you're listening to it at all. But it will be out. It's going to be out in plenty of time for Christmas. So, a little pre-Christmas treat for you all. But yes, we'll see you in 2017, as I already said. So, say goodbye to the good people.
Bye, good people.
Bye.
Bye.
Ho, ho, homicide. Now, Amanda, this is the portion where we talk bad about Justin so he can splice it into the end of the episode, so. Eric, this is a date, holiday-specific quiz, not just holidays. It's popular.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, for FFS.
I'm curious if Justin thinks that the British girl in To All a Good Night is actually British.
I'm curious if Justin's going to flood his own toilet.
There's a lot of palm trees outside the Calvin Finishing School for Girls.
Are you talking about Trisha, my idol?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I
take that bloody mask off.
I thought I was going to do the whole podcast just speaking in Trisha dialogue, but...
Take that bloody mask off.